You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview with director Kari Viswanathan. Did I say it right? Viswanathan. Wait. Hold on. Kari Viswanathan. I got it right that time.
Viswanathan.
Oh, my God. I was saying it right at the break, and then I just stumbled on my own.
It's all good.
Say it one more time. Say it for the people so they can hear it loud and proud.
My name is Kari Viswanathan.
Kari Viswanathan. I will hopefully say that right at the end of the show to redeem myself, but don't count on it, all right?
Yeah, just now, brother. It's all good.
So, Kari, you are this talented director, and I was reading your bio. Tell me what was the moment of Zen or the movie that did it, but before you tell me that, let's talk about your t-shirt, because your t-shirt is awesome, and tell me the story that you were going to tell me off the air about this t-shirt that I told you to save for the pod.
Yes. So for those of you listening in, I'm wearing a t-shirt that says throwback, and it's in the Jurassic Park logo. It's in the form of the Jurassic Park logo. So it's a weird story. I got this shirt at a 90s-themed Halloween party in New York City.
That's awesome. So,
now, here's what happened. I went as Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, and I'm walking around New York City with my friends. And I'm doing the whole, all righty then. And I had like a package and everything that I just like kicked around in the city, because he does that in the beginning of the first movie, if you remember that.
Yep. That's one of my favorite movies ever.
It's so good. I grew up watching that. I love Jim Carrey. It's not my namesake, but Jim Carrey is one of my favorite actors. So.
I think he's at his peak too in that movie for me. He's so funny and so raw. It's so great.
He's so good. I feel like he just commits in a way where it's so relatable. Like, he just goes all the way in his slapstick, and he's like just not afraid to. You know, he's like, fuck it, I'm just gonna go for it, you know.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, I digress. So what happened was, I was with my friends in New York City, and I think they were telling me about a 90s themed Halloween party. We were just walking around, it was Halloween. And we get to the party, it's not that exciting. So we go inside, and it's just kind of like a very sleepy bar. It was also on a Monday night, which was actually Halloween, so that was probably why, and people were probably like in bed, you know, going. Most people are probably in bed, like, trying to go to work tomorrow. But anyway, we walk inside, and, like, there's, like, I think one person dresses the Riddler, but it was a very sleepy Halloween party. And I'm his ace, and I'm just, like, trying to, like, go around and, like, you know, like, how you doing, sir? All righty then. I have a package for you. Like, I was literally just, like, going around trying to do scenes from Ace Ventura, talking out of my butt and everything, and everybody got a kick out of it. But, you know, I did my best, and people were pretty cool with it. And like, we ended up leaving a little bit afterward, like 20 minutes, because nothing was really happening. But then the guy who was running the party came up to me and he said, dude, do you want this shirt? Like, we have a bunch of these. And I was like, hell yeah. I proudly took the shirt and I wear it to this day. And I actually haven't worn it in a while until just this night when you asked me about 30 minutes ago if I wanted to be on your show.
Hell yeah. And you said, all righty then.
I said, all righty. To be honest, I was just like, oh, I don't know. I was literally about to go and dress into my pajamas, about to go to sleep. When and thanks to your powers of persuasion and your enthusiasm, I was like, you know what? Let's do this.
You know what? I find that, and I'm sure you've gone through experiences like this. The best stuff happens when it's spur of the moment like that. Like, I always say yes to any opportunities that happen on the fly like that, because it's like, if I can make it happen, then it's like, let's do it. Let's rock and roll. Let's make sure it works. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
It's one of those things where it's like, sometimes it's like, do you just jump in? And usually the best stuff happens when you just jump in. And it's like, what do you got to lose? So I always take that approach. And you and I talked about having you on the show. So I'm happy to have you on, man. But tell me, what was the movie? What was the movie that made it happen for you when you were a kid watching whatever it was that made you want to direct?
Gladiator.
Oh, wow.
This is Gladiator. So
great movie.
I was in California. I was visiting my cousins, and they asked me if I wanted to see Gladiator with Russell Crowe. And I didn't know who he was, or I didn't know anything about movies, because before then, I wanted to be an animator. And, you know, I'm a 90s kid, so I grew up with Nickelodeon shows and Cartoon Network. So I'm all about that Rugrats and Dexter's Lab, if you know what I mean. So, like,
yeah, of course.
That was kind of my journey until I went to see Gladiator. I got to tell you, man, that movie changed my life in so many ways, because I've never seen up to then. I watched mainly like animated films and just like silly comedies, like anything with Adam Sandler I'm always into. But like when I saw Gladiator, I was just riveted by, you know, just for starters, the fact that Ridley Scott was able to create a whole world like on screen, like the Roman Empire, and just like recreate like the big armies and the catapults with like, you know, with those like, that was launching fireballs at other movies, and like the recreating the Roman Colosseum and like adding tigers and sword fights. And
the tigers that was the one thing I remember when I saw the trailer. I was like, I got to see this movie, because that one swipe, the tiger swipes at Russell Crowe and it just barely misses him. I was like, I got to see that. You know what I mean?
Sorry to interrupt. There were no CGI shots of the tiger, by the way. And I know this because I'm a nerd. I actually love to collect DVDs, and I would watch like the special features of all the movies I loved and watched over the years. And I believe like all the tiger shots were CGI, including one that like I think they used trickery or green screen to superimpose it when they tried to swipe Russell Crowe. But yeah, man, I got to tell. But like part of my film school growing up was like buying all these movies and watching them, and then watching the DVD commentaries and the documentaries about how they made them. So part of my knowledge comes from that. Another part of my knowledge comes from film school and working on sets. And that's kind of how I collected all this experience.
Well, let's talk about a little bit of your film school experience, because I just saw that you studied under the screenwriter of Legends of the Fall. It's one of my favorite movies. What a terrific influence. What that experience was like and what you learned from the screenwriter that wrote that.
So I have to confess, Nikhil, is that how you say your name?
Yeah, that is. That is. You did it.
One for one. I love it. I have to confess, I have not seen Legends of the Fall.
Oh, man. That's a good movie.
I need to watch it. But the screenwriter was Susan Schilliday. Shout out to Susan if you're there. She was the first writing professor who taught me the basics of screenwriting. I ended up – this was during my senior year at Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts. Shout out Hampshire. And I learned basically how to write a screenplay, and me and like she would teach a workshop, and me and a few other students would come and get together and share what we wrote, and then we'd critique each other's work and see like what you know, basically like, you know, how to structure a scene, how to build characters, how to establish exposition in a way where it's like very subtle versus just like, you know, like I'm gonna go to the store and buy this thing for this guy because this thing, other thing is gonna happen. If I don't do it, I'm in trouble. Like, you know, she was all about, you're gonna take that and you're gonna put it into, you're gonna like write show, not tell. And and amongst many other things, she was very good at, I would write scenes that I felt like I was really happy with, and she would say, nope, it's got to be better, do it over. And it got me, it drove me up the wall. But then like I learned a lot about discipline and writing just from her one class. So,
and why would she make you rewrite it? Like would it be like you were kind of meandering with certain characters, or was it like not descriptive enough, too descriptive?
I don't know. I think one thing I remember from writing my script. So this was about a guy who obviously was like kind of had trouble fitting in with friends and talking to girls, you know, very relatable, I think. So I remember a lot of the scenes I wrote. This is one example, but a lot of the scenes I wrote were just him kind of failing at everything, whether it's just like talking to people or like, you know, he's not good at sports, he's not good at learning this foreign language. And one of the biggest pearls of wisdom she was able to give me was to have, first of all, write something that's likable, but also write something where maybe there's a small victory within, or there's a small victory, or there's some kind of growth or development within those scenes versus a person who's like, hey, look at me, I'm sad, and, you know, nothing's working for me, and, you know, that's just how it is. And, you know, I taking that note really actually changed my perception of how to write characters, because I found myself writing all these interesting scenes. So, like, for one example, there's a scene where he's and I should preface this script that I wrote was later adapted into a film that I directed as my final thesis at college. So there was one scene in the film I remember where the main character is going bowling with his best friend, and there's a scene where originally the main character like bowled a gutter ball and his friend rolled a strike, right? I thought it made sense in my mind, but then she made a suggestion or led me to like rewriting the scene, but I ended up writing it where the main character bowls a nine and then misses the last pin and he's like, oh, right? And then his best friend rolls a gutter and he's just like, woo, I'm having fun. This is so awesome. I love it, right? And that to me was like just exactly it established like what kind of characters they were and like how they react to certain things in their lives, you know. Like it was very crystal clear, and that was one thing I kind of took away. It was like one of the scenes I kind of remember the best when writing it. And
making a character, like a character's traits kind of magnified a little bit through some kind of action, which is
some kind of action, just showing how it relates to another character and the contrast and just seeing how people react to certain things, you know.
Well, I think you need to watch Legends of the Fall, because it was a tremendous film. And then you're going to be like, man, I can't believe I ever questioned her, because she knows how to write a great story. I mean, that's one of the best movies ever made, and tremendous, tremendous story. And I think you'll really dig it. But so tell me what film school was like for you. Did it stifle your creativity, or did you find yourself more inspired because you were studying what you love and you were learning the craft?
A little bit from column A and column B. So at the beginning of my college year, I took a film workshop where we actually learned how to shoot on celluloid and work with what's called Bolex cameras, which are 16 millimeter cameras from the 30s. So we actually learned how to shoot on film and light film and process film and then edit on film on like a real flatbed. So I'll tell you, that experience of shooting a movie on film and just praying that it all comes out evenly exposed and there's nothing like nothing got overexposed or lost is very scary, but also like it's kind of like you have to translate your fear to like that focus you need to just make sure it really looks good. And I will say, like, the first time I made a movie, I thought, like, you know, I had the camera set a certain way. I thought it turned out fine, but then when I played it back, most of it was out of focus.
Wow.
A magical scene, and I'm like, all right, I'll do better next time.
You know what? Yeah, I have a lot of respect for the old school filmmakers for that reason, because it's like they didn't even know what they had. They didn't even know what they had until they saw it, and it was like, oh my God, hope it works. You know, it's like we're so used to the digital world now where it's like you can look at your phone or your camera or whatever it is and be like, oh, this is what it is. Yeah, and it's like, oh, it's auto-focused or – the lighting works, or you can edit the lighting, whereas you can't really do much once you have it. You know what I mean? So there's definitely a respect that you earn after going through that process. Did it ever make you want to shoot on film after you went through the experience, or no?
Oh, absolutely. And I still want to. I haven't done it since college, but it does cross my mind every once in a while just to give it a shot. And it's you know, it's really fun to do. And honestly, I think it makes one as a filmmaker more acute in where to place the camera. Cause I think when you're shooting on digital, when you're shooting with digital cameras, it's very easy to say, okay, I'm going to shoot you in a close-up. Then I'll shoot you from a wide shot. Then I'll shoot you in a profile shot. Then I'll just shoot this angle because why not, you know? Right. And shooting on film really hones in your focus. And also, like, you're spending money on film. So when you're hearing that through the actual film camera, you're hearing your money being spent and burnt, and you better make that shit work on the first shot, because otherwise you're up the creek. So
a friend of mine took me to the Fox lot, and he showed me the original Star Wars film like cases, which was like so epic to see, because I was like, oh my God, that's the original. And it's in like this like fully air conditioned room. It has to be a certain humidity, the whole bit. But you know, they were in these leather cases, and I'm like, you won't see movies like that anymore. Like, there won't be any cool film cases unless they're, you know, kind of transferring them, but they don't do that anymore. It's all digital. Everything is on hard drives now, you know? So
yeah,
a little bit of a lost art, you know, unfortunately, but
yeah. You could argue Spielberg and Scorsese and Christopher Nolan are trying to keep celluloid alive at least. So I think there is a beacon of hope, I think, in that respect. I would like to try film, and I don't think filmmakers, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think filmmakers want to see celluloid go because I don't know.
It just looks so great. It looks so great.
It looks so much better than video.
And, you know, I actually record a lot of my albums on analog tape because of that same reason, because there's a level of quality that you just can't mimic. And people will try to tell me, oh, yeah, you can mimic it with this. And I'm like, no, you can't. Not if you have the right tape and the right tape machine. There's no way. I know for a fact because I've done them both and I've tried to modify. And there's a certain level of warmth that you get with analog tape. And it's the same thing with film. It's like there's a certain reason you can't replace that. It's like it'll never be something it's not.
There's, you know, there's a texture in film that I love seeing that you just can't get in, you know, on digital video. Like it feels old fashioned, and I don't know how to describe it. Like you mentioned something, I can't remember what you said, but like just that, I love being a practitioner of like the old ways of making movies. And I feel like, you know, it's definitely good to keep that alive for sure.
You know what? We know it's really cool. This same friend that was working at Fox, he told me that Martin Scorsese is actually like the official, like the official word on if a classic movie is of the right color specs. So like they actually bring him in as an official like person that he'll say, oh, it's too blue, or it's not like, because he has like a kind of like a photogenic memory, but for his eyes.
Wow,
isn't that crazy?
He actually like remembers, like he doesn't have like a copy of the actual film.
No, he remembers so specifically the hues and the colors of the classic films that anything that is a classic movie, like a Wizard of Oz or something, they'll actually bring him in as the official, like, okay, does this pass the color grade? And he'll tell you, actually, this is not correct. It needs to be more this, which is so wild. You know, it's like he never even talks about that, but I mean, they bring him in all the time for that. So little fun fact.
There was three things I want to say. First of all, I watched a film called Black Narcissus. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's a film from the 40s by two directors named Michael Powell and Eric Pressburger. It's a very... It's basically about nuns in the Himalayas going crazy, but kind of like a horror drama film. But the colors are just spectacular and beautiful. And Scorsese regards it as one of his favorite films. And I think he was responsible for remastering it. So like I can definitely see, you know, how much attention and like craft he puts into like restoring a film. And I feel like that's just amazing that he's just one of the guys who's
like, isn't that wild?
Right, he's one of the practitioners in doing that. Second thing I want to say is that I've seen so many like restored classic movies that are just like that they color graded teal and orange, and I'm just like, fuck that bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. Like, leave it black and white, dude. Leave it black and white.
It's like I was watching the movie Heat with De Niro and Pacino, and they fucking like tinted that shit, and it doesn't even look like the way the movie was released. And I know this because I have the original DVD. Like, the colors are just so freaking monochromatic. It just looks terrible. I'm like, I'm venting, but I'm. You know, it's just, it's a travesty.
Well, I love that. My respect for your filmmaking has gone up just because of the way you're looking at those things. Because I'm like one of those people that like, I love the 70s. I think art in the 70s and 80s had this like renaissance that I'm always trying to like hold on to, because there were certain movies or certain looks or certain vibes of filmmaking and making art and making music that will never be replicated in the same way unless people go back to that same kind of process, you know? So I love that you love all those things about those classic movies, because classic for me, that's what makes art so exciting, is like capturing this moment and not trying to recreate it and modernize it. And that, I usually think it ruins it unless they're using the actual tapes to kind of like enhance what's already there without kind of like messing it up. But that's usually not the case. You know what I mean? It's like usually they're going to mess with it. So tell me, as a filmmaker, what draws you to story? What draws you to characters? What draws you to certain projects to film things a certain way?
That's a good question. That's a lot to cover in I don't know if you have 3 hours, but I'll try to condense it. What captivates me? You know, I don't really know. I think it just comes to a really interesting character and story. Plain and simple. You know, I could say like the genres I would like to dabble in are like sci-fi and fantasy. Like I would love to be like be like an Indian Spielberg or Tim Burton or James Cameron. That's kind of like what my direction is.
My three
is.
Right there, man. You add Scorsese though, but
yeah. Scorsese, of course. Right. Honestly though, I think it really just comes down to like an interesting character, whether it's just like a weird, interesting line of work or just like a really someone dysfunctional, but like you put them in a great story or you contrast them with a different character with budding ideas and you have a great movie. And I mean, I don't really know how to articulate this, but really it just comes down to a good story and good characters. And I feel like we need to see more of that considering that there's so many reboots and remakes and, you know, out there. And I don't know. It's a little concerning to me.
It's all right, man.
It's 11:30 where I'm in Connecticut right now, but, yeah, man, it just comes down to story and characters for me. It doesn't even matter what the genre is, you know. Just if it's a good script, I'd love to direct it. You know, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, what I love, it's like there's so many, you know, a lot of people complain that a lot of stories have been told so many times before, but the same kind of hero's journey stories I love hearing.
Yeah.
And I love, you know, like that's what I love about movies like The Goonies, and I love like Star Wars, and I love, you know, like when I see a Harry Potter, I see all those same kind of elements told in like a modern type of storytelling. So I love that character and story are like the two big things. Do you have a camera of choice that you like to shoot on?
You know what's funny? I've been shooting on a Blackmagic Pocket 4K for a few years, but I've been meaning to upgrade to maybe a Sony FX3 or a Canon C70. I don't know how many of you know out there what I don't know how many of you listeners are camera junkies, but that's just
There are definitely some. So you know you'll be surprised because there's so many. You know, everybody hears about the Red, but now there's so many comparable cameras that are like half the price or even less. You know,
I mean I would like to try any cameras I could get my hands on. Honestly, I guess I'm just being realistic and telling you what's sort of like what's accessible to me, but I'd love to shoot on an IMAX camera. You know, heck, I'd love to mount a camera to a crane or a dolly and do some crazy epic Spielberg Scorsese moving shots. Cause like, you know, that's what I love to do. I don't know if the camera matters that much to me, but those are like, that's my short answer is what I want in the near future, but in the far distant, far galaxy, far, far away future, you know. I don't know. I'm binging Mandalorian right now, so I'm in Star Wars mode.
Are you watching the new season?
I am on season 2. I mean, I'm on episode 2 of season 3, and I'm loving it so far, so no spoilers. Okay. It's good.
I have a buddy. I haven't started the new season, but I have a buddy who's been a guest on Wake Up Hollywood who's in the 3rd episode. So I have to catch up to you. So we'll have to discuss once we finish that. But let's play the music video that you directed first, and we'll talk a little bit about what went into that. Here's what's the name of the music video one more time?
It's called Keluarga.
I'm going to let him say that.
It's Indonesian for family.
Okay, here it is.
Okay.
Go on, go. They've watched me grow and loved me so, right from the beginning. I didn't know.
All right, that was awesome. I remember watching that a couple weeks ago when you first sent it to me. Tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind it. I love kind of like the images of her singing like to the camera, and then also kind of like showing what the word means without it, you know, without you having to say what it is, you know.
Yeah. So
show the images of her family. Really, it's a feel good music video. Tell me what went into the inspiration behind it.
Well, I should say that. So Ashley Hamill is the writer singer of this piece. She was the one who pretty much just brought this project into fruition. So she's of Indonesian descent. She's also half white like I am. I'm half white, half Indian, so we kind of share this.
This interview's over. I'm just kidding.
You just cut it off at the 30-minute mark. Like, you're only half Indian.
You're like, we're out of time. Only half. No, I'm just kidding.
We're at like 29-19. Like, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm just teasing.
The question was, okay, what was the question?
What was the inspiration behind kind of painting the story and kind of like delivering that message?
So Ashley is Indonesian, and she's of Indonesian heritage. Keluarga means family. So she wrote that in obviously singing about her family and her experiences of feeling like she's part of the Indonesian diaspora in America, amongst many other things. So she actually, Ashley's an actress, and I met her in an improv group, and we've been friends for about 10 years. So then when she reached out to me and offered me to direct this music video, you know, obviously I was like flattered, and I said, of course. And I didn't really know what Keluarga meant at the time. She just sent me this song. So she told me a little bit about the video and the theme she was exploring. And then together we just kind of came up with like ideas, I think. Well, she kind of came up with most of the scenes and the structure. I kind of offered ideas, and we kind of just meshed it into sort of a little narrative piece of her like looking in the mirror, trying on Indonesian dresses, being with her family, and it just kind of came together organically. So really, it's really the whole video is about family and wanting to fit in and, you know, staying true to your heritage.
Yeah, what I love too is like you know, my dad collects masks around the world, and you know, I love the Indonesian masks that they had. My dad actually has some from there, and it's so interesting because it just shows you like symbols of like, you know, kind of like defending the family a little bit with that, but it's like playful because it's the father and son just kind of like, you know, messing around. But I mean, there's all these spiritual elements of it with her kind of like her garb, you know, like her dress and how she kind of like wanted to convey how spiritual the family is in who they are too. You know what I mean? There's really nice touches that are just like really subtle and really beautiful. So you kind of capture the culture, you capture the word, and you made something kind of like modern, really simple. It's like, how did you decide what shots you wanted to get of her kind of like singing into the camera in certain ways?
Mostly intuition. You know, I storyboarded the video, and my cinematographer, Matt Bradbury, shout out to him, was also helpful in devising a few of the wide shots. So like some of the wide shots at the very beginning of the film, when the camera dollies in on Ashley, like with the door frame on the side, like to give some movement, was his idea. You know, I coordinated a shot where there's a puppet in front of Ashley, and we kind of dolly sideways, and a rack focuses to her. So I'm just flexing, but a lot of the shots were mainly like just something that I kind of storyboarded. Ashley had shots in mind she wanted to do. Matt had a few shots, and we just kind of worked together to bring these shots to life. So,
did you shoot it all in one day and then edit it in about maybe a couple weeks, or how long did it take?
We shot it in 2 days, and then I think we edited for about, me and Ashley edited for about 2 weeks. So we shot half of it at her house in New Haven, and then we shot the other half at this cafe that we actually dressed into an Indonesian household.
Wow.
Yeah. It's wild to this day. So I have a YouTube channel, not a very big one, but I did a behind the scenes video on how we actually set dress to cafe to make it look like an Indonesian household. There were like flyers on the there were flyers of like all these bands on the wall and bookshelves and plants and whatnot. We got rid of everything. And then we brought in all this like Indonesian tapestry and like relics and props and masks and just like stuff that Ashley's family were nice enough to give us. And Matt and Ashley set decked it. And then I just made a few little adjustments too. And then we just kind of framed it up, put the family in there, and we shot it. And yeah.
Really, I always find editing is like, it's an art form. It's a separate art form.
Oh, sure.
How did you kind of like, you know, I'm sure you had several versions that looked very similar, and then there's a final version. Mm-hmm. How did you kind of decide on that? And I say this because when I shot one of my first music videos, we shot it in one day on the Santa Monica Pier. It took us a month to edit it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I saw it. It was really nice.
But it was crazy, the editing part. Like, you know, yeah. I was learning like the 24 frames a second and like knowing like how long things needed to be. So like I went through all the cameras and made all these notes and kind of like knew, okay, I wanted to do this here and kind of like move it around. But man, when it came down to the last like three edits, I mean, any of those could have been released, but it was like, yeah. It came down to like finagling, like, oh, this could be better if it's like this. How did you know when you had the right edit?
I don't know. It came down to intuition. That's my short answer. But the long answer is we did have a structure in mind where at the beginning, the way we set it up was like, you know, we set up the fact that, you know, Ashley's character is kind of feeling lost. And then we have the scene where she's looking at herself in the mirror, trying on dresses, trying to like figure out her sort of like, you know, to quote Mulan, when will my reflection show, you know, like trying to find herself, so to speak. And culturally speaking. And then the third part of the music video is her with her family, just kind of embracing each other and having a laugh and like playing and whatnot. And so I guess there is kind of a story of like, you know, feeling lost, trying to find something and then finding it. That's kind of where we started from. And I kind of, and I knew sort of from the beginning, that's how I wanted to structure it. And really just like from there, like when it came to the scenes where we cut to Ashley singing and playing the guitar, it was just finding shots that looked nice, but also kind of told the story. So, you know, obviously to give an example, like, you know, there's the shot at the beginning when the camera creeps in from, you know, outside the room. That was kind of important just to establish where she was. I just wanted, and also we needed a shot of her playing the guitar. So that way, when we cut to any close-ups of her, even if the guitar is cut off or she's cut off, like we've at least established that there is a guitar and like we know where we are. I'm very conscious of that. And I try to make sure that like we shoot stuff in a way. It's like, for any new filmmakers out there, it's always good to shoot stuff in wides, medium shots, and close-ups just so you have enough to work with. That's kind of how we did it.
You have her play like the whole song in one shot and then have her like, so you had options, or did you kind of have a vision of what you wanted when?
It was a mixture of, I had a vision, but we kind of kept it loose. I think because I made a whole storyboard, so like we had a blueprint to fall back on, but we kind of knew from the beginning we were going to like just find and discover new things as we went. So that's how I like to work. That's how Ashley likes to work. Ashley loves to like just discover things, and I like to do that too, but I try to keep things sort of like, at least
you're a planner like I am. Like I just plan for the unexpected, because it's like the more you plan, then you make room for the right kind of unexpected and not the wrong kind of unexpected. You know what I mean? So
you really got to just embrace the fact that something spontaneous will happen. And like, for me, I like to shoot the rehearsals of stuff, because that's where the best stuff comes from. Like when it comes to even shooting a short film, for me, like I just like to shoot the rehearsal. So the actor, even if they feel a little weird or unsure of themselves, the first take is always going to be spontaneous. Like, right. It just will. Unless you're Robert De Niro and you can do it like 9 more times. Like, you know, you, for me, you want to capture that lightning in a bottle, like whatever it is, even if they mess up, even if whatever they do. And I think there's a bunch of those moments on set. Like, so the scene where Ashley's playing with the kid and the father, those are Ashley's friends of hers. They were not actors at all. And the 6-year-old was not an actor. So I had worked with children before, because I used to be a tutor and I used to be an assistant teacher for a film class that I helped teach for kids. So I kind of knew that going in, like, this kid, I mean, he was 6. I've worked with 6-year-olds too. I knew his energy was going to be good up to a certain point. So the thing we did was when he came on set, I just kind of introduced myself. I became friendly. I just kind of acted goofy and just made him feel relaxed. And then we just kind of prepared the shot. And I said to Matt, you know, we're going to just shoot this 10 minutes through and we'll just grab what we can get. Cause I know the kid is going to like burn out after 10 minutes. And we did it. And we got a lot of great stuff from the kid. We got a lot of great stuff from the kid and the father interacting with each other. The father was great too. And Ashley was good. Just like kind of mingling with them, just keeping the dynamic.
I thought it was her family. So that's so crazy. They're just actors.
Yeah. No, they're friends of Ashley. Rama and James, they were excellent. We kept it ambiguous on like what Ashley's role is in the family. Like she could be the mother, she could be the sister, she could be the cousin. Like you can form.
I thought it kind of looked like it was her family, but that kind of made it intimate. You know what I mean? So yeah. It was cool. It was very cool.
It was cool. It was a learning experience. I think we had a really good shoot, and you know, for what it was just like a crew of four people for the whole day, and it was a low budget, but I think we did a pretty good job.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah. We'll have to collaborate on a music video soon.
Yes. Yes, we should.
Let's play the next trailer that you did with a mutual friend of ours, Rajiv Satyal. Yes. Tell us a little bit about that trailer and what went into it.
So Rajiv has a show called What Do You Bring to the Table, which is a South Asian platform comedy talk show where he brings on special guests and they play a game and just gab and, you know, they schmooze and Rajiv interviews them. And we've had a lot of cool guests on the show. We had Hasan Minhaj on the show. We've had Lily Singh, Deepak Chopra, Utkarsh Ambudkar from Ghosts, Zarna Garg, amongst many, many other
easy,
excellent, very fun guests. And I was fortunate enough to direct the first some episodes of the first season of the show. We're on our second season right now, and it's a very fun show. It's streaming on YouTube.
All right, here we go. Here's the trailer.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Rajiv Satyal. I'm a comedian and a host. My guest picks a game, and we play it. So enjoy. What do you bring to the table?
I like the title of this series, What Do You Bring to the Table?
I'm glad.
It's putting the onus on the guest.
Right.
Damn, what?
Why don't you put me away here?
Well, I don't want to hurt you, Rajiv.
Do no harm, right? Isn't that your mantra?
Oh, you're like Borat, but not as good.
Man, I always make it about doo-doo.
You're like bleeding outside of your lips because you just talk.
It is a talk show.
Melody is the universal language.
You're a recurring character in white people's lives.
Get paid.
Zero to make my own show. Okay. One of these days. It wasn't supposed to be that funny.
I love Rajiv. He's such a great cat.
Awesome. I hope you appreciate the plug-in, Rajiv. I'm giving
Rajiv. He's been on the show. He's been on the show before. So tell me what it was like. Like, I mean, obviously these are pretty high profile Southeast Asian guests.
Yeah.
Tell me if was there a favorite, and then was there a favorite to shoot or a favorite episode to shoot?
That's a tough one. They were all good in their own special way. So like when I came aboard, I actually got the job through a mutual friend of ours, Kabir Chopra. Shout out to Kabir. When he brought me on, he said we were going to be shooting an episode with Asif Madvi. And I was like, oh, wow. Because I knew him from The Daily Show. So I got a little nervous, but it was like, wow, that's a step up. Because I never like actually filmed an interview of a celebrity before. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, so we went to Rajiv's friend's apartment, and we shot Melanie Chandra. That's her name, actress. Shout out to you as well. We shot in her apartment with Asif, Vikram Gandhi, who's Kumare in the documentary of Kumare. There was a third guest. I can't remember who it was. Or maybe it was just the two of them. But we... that was my first day, and I was really nervous because I was familiar with both these guys, but you know, they gave obviously, like when I was listening to Asif went first. So when I was listening to his interview, he was just so freaking charismatic and funny and giving up all these pearls of wisdom. Like I remember he was going off into a tangent about how when he was growing up feeling Indian, he felt like a guest star in in a white person's TV show. And I was like, oh, wow. I actually feel that way sometimes when I'm around my white friends. This is incredible. Like, and it just sealed the deal for me. Like, this is a great show. And I watched Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. You know, that's one of my favorite shows as well.
Me too. So, I love
it. I love that show. I could watch it all day. And this was like the Indian version of that. So, of course, that won me over. And then, like, you know, I got to meet Vikram Gandhi, who was cool as well. And then I think the next gig I got was directing Hasan Minhaj. I'm so sorry I'm butchering your name.
That's all right.
But I filmed, you know, we filmed an interview with him, and I got to direct the episode. When I say direct, I really just helped, like, place the three cameras, and, like, me and the crew kind of helped block where they would sit. But it was kind of a straightforward shoot. I actually didn't know as much about him. I knew he was on The Daily Show, but I wasn't familiar with his stand-up, and I kind of chose to keep it that way because I didn't want to get nervous.
Right.
So then when I got to the set, you know, I met him briefly. You know, he's definitely a cool guy. Very smart, very funny. And then, yeah, we just shot it, and I just did my best to stay awake because I was on 2 hours of sleep and nervous as hell the night before. Cause I just wanted to do a good job directing, like, on the show. So, you know,
when you had Deepak Chopra, like, that had to be a lightning shoot. You're just like, oh.
Yeah, I definitely felt a little vibey in that room. It was an interesting experience. But I don't feel like a good Indian because I didn't know a lot about Deepak Chopra. But when I was listening to him, you know, just talk about his philosophy of life and, like, you know, incorporating his scientific knowledge, like, into his discussions, it was really interesting stuff. Like, it was very cerebral, and there are moments when, you know, he would just go off on all these tangents, which were really cool. And I say this with love. Some of them went on for so long that, like, we obviously had to cut it down, but there was so much interesting stuff. It was just really hard to figure out what was too tangential for the interview and which was enough to keep you fascinated before we had to kind of, like, you know, move to the next topic. But he was cool too. That was an interesting one. I mean, the ones that were on were all really interesting in their own way. So I don't have a favorite one, but I think they're all definitely worth checking out. They are worth checking
out. Who won most of the games, the ping pong or the Connect Four? Was Rajiv, was he a badass at that?
Yeah, I guess he's a badass. I know he's gonna love it. It's gonna stroke his ego because I work for him and I still do. So, but he's got some game on ping pong. I will say that. He got some game, Jobs.
You know what he said? I was like, oh man, I want to play you ping pong, man, because I know you got a table. And he's like, yeah, man, I can't wait till I beat you. I was like, oh,
you need to destroy him, school his ass.
I'm ready.
He is good at ping pong. I played with him before, and he's like, he definitely knows. He's got it. Yeah,
I'm ready. I need to brush up on my ping pong skills before I go over there casually pretending like I haven't played in a long time.
Next time we go to his party, we can play doubles with him.
I'm ready. Put me in, coach. Well, let's play a little bit of your web series. Tell me a little bit about what went into that, and you've been directing. This is like your latest project. Tell me a little bit about this web series. What was the inspiration behind it?
Actually, I directed this years ago. So my friend Jason Akum, shout out to Jason. He's a actor, writer, producer in Hollywood. He has a film festival that he holds every year in Bridgeport, Connecticut, called the Bridgeport Film Festival. I'm just giving another plug in.
Nice. You're like a walking billboard over here. I love it.
No, just a lot of stuff I'm trying to just get out of my system. But yeah, so Jason and I have been friends for, oh my gosh, almost 13 years, I think. So I think we met 13 years ago, and he's an actor. I filmed a play for him that he directed. And then we just kind of stayed in touch. And then years down the line, we lived in New York together, like in when we were just kind of like struggling filmmakers, actors. And he was telling me, he was writing this web series that he was telling me about. And he asked me if I was interested in directing it. And actually at first I said, oh, I'm not sure I could do it because I think I'm busy with this, that, and the other thing. But then, like, I eventually came around and I ended up directing his web series. It's called Shaw. It's about this guy who checks himself into therapy and wants to become a life coach.
Wow. That's an interesting twist. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here it goes. Let's play it. Let's play a little bit of it and we'll talk about it. Yeah.
Buddy, you okay? Shaw, stop being a lightweight. Come on, man.
Gotta keep the party going!
Shaw? Why didn't you call me sooner?
Nah, he's fine. Maybe just probably shouldn't have 5 shots for $10 again. This always works in the movies.
What are you doing?
dude. Oh.
It's Shaw. I love him. I love him, but, you know, he has his moments. I feel like he's got a lot of yin, not a lot of yang.
I've known Shaw for the past, well, maybe 3 years. And I've seen him at his low points and his high ones. Except they weren't that high. But this, by far, was the worst.
It was a natural reaction, okay? Just put yourself in my shoes. Walk a mile in my Adidas, all right?
Derek, what is your excuse? You're his best friend. You should not have allowed him to drown his pain in whiskey.
They were firebombing.
Whiskey.
Look, it's not a big deal. We're just having a guy's day out. We're hanging out, having a good time, being besties with testies, okay?
Right. Getting cut off at the bar at 4 p.m.? Is a great time.
Okay. Molly, shut the fuck up.
Wow. Shaw, enough. Nice. Okay? Just give me the bottle.
No. Give me the bottle. Look, it's not that serious, okay? I just... Guy's night out.
It's starting to look like a problem, boozy.
Okay.
No, she's right, bro.
No, she's, right, bro.
Oh, come on. Real mature. Just...
Like... You're so mature with your fucking rainbow, sunrise, Jamaica t-shirt.
You gave me this stupid-ass t-shirt for Christmas Quantica, bro.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that you're better than me because you can remember more
Dude,
things than
chill.
Me?
Get off your man period, Papa Zoloft. You know better yet, just relax.
Derek, shut your organic kale-eating ass up!
Dude, I saved your life! You were face down, ass up on the pavement over there.
Face down, ass up.
What's that? You're like my best friend, dude. You saved my life.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're all right, man. Hey, you're like the AC Slater to my Zach Morris.
Yeah, I feel it. What is wrong with you, dude? What is this? What is this?
Oh my god, he's bleeding, Sean.
Dude, what is your problem? You gonna jump on the garbage cans? I scare people?
Chill.
Whoa, chill.
We're shooting a YouTube prank.
Oh, you're shooting a YouTube prank.
Is he okay?
I should have stayed at Juilliard.
Yeah, so you think this is funny? Having your fucking clown buddy jump out of a garbage can and scare innocent people?
Dude, we're millennial. This is what we do, Grandpa.
Oh, so this is what you do, right? Try to get reactions out of black people? You try to scare black people?
That's really?
What
you're
trying to get. Yeah, really. That's what you want to get on your stupid camera?
Yeah, you got
what the fuck is this, dude? Got both little bitch over here trying to attack people.
Oh, easy, bro.
Fake ass Mark Wahlberg.
This would look great on my reel.
Hey, people.
Stop it.
Hey, boy, I'm four brothers. I'm out.
Can anyone help here? Look, doesn't anyone see this? What's going on? This is so fucked up.
Come on, Mike Tyson.
Yo, mama.
Oh, my mama?
Yeah, and your cousin, and your auntie, and your bitch-ass grandma.
Grandma, you're going to bring grandma into this?
Yeah.
I'm so scared. I am calling my lawyer. I'm suing.
Hey,
cool it down. Cool it, man. Seriously.
I'm going to put that camera up your fucking ass.
Whoa, don't do that.
Pussy.
Holy shit. It was phantasmagorical. I mean, like something out of MTV Punk'd, except Ashton never showed up.
You the host of this fucking shitty ass show?
Oh, shitty show?
Yeah.
Pranksters ain't shitty.
Oh, pranks is not shitty,
no,
right?
No, pranksters ain't shitty.
Get the fuck out of my face, dude. Get the camera out of my face.
He was actually kind of lucky, to be honest. I mean, the cougar did not press charges, but Bozo the Clown did. But all in all, you know, no fines, no butt-fuck jail time, I'd say that's a win. But...
Derek says I was lucky. Lucky, okay. So, $250 fine, all right? 4 hours in a jail cell, 80 hours of community service, and 6 goddamn months of anger management. And I went viral.
What is wrong with you, dude? What is this? What is wrong with you, dude? What is wrong
Yeah, that was cool. That was very cool.
Thank you.
It's actually very 90s. It's a little throwback to 90s. So tell us a little bit about like how it all came about and what the inspiration behind these scenes were and how you wanted to shoot it.
You know, Jason wrote the script, so he just wrote it from his personal experiences and just kind of his sense of humor. And that's really the short answer to that. Like there's a 6-episode arc, so he basically brought me on to direct the first 5 episodes, and then he took on the 6th when he was ready. So just kind of a fun comedy, kind of in the style of Modern Family and The Office. He loves The Office. So.
Yeah, it's like documentary style, a little bit like punk too. You know, it's got a little bit of that.
A little bit of that, yeah. It's a very kind of sweet, but also raunchy at times, and mischievous at times, and edgy at times type of humor. So, you know, a lot of fun things in that web series.
And do you write like for a web series? Is he the primary writer, or do you write any of it, or do you kind of like storyboard? What's the creative part of the process for you? Is it just the shooting, or is it kind of like are you collaborating on like what it's going to be as a composition, you know?
So in this case, like he wrote the script and then he asked me if I wanted to take a pass at it. And, you know, just from my writing classes, I was able to like help sort of like tighten up some scenes, kind of write some characters, maybe like help embellish a few jokes here, maybe like compress these two scenes into one there, maybe kind of just help kind of bring a structure. I kind of like, there was actually, so the scene at the beginning of the pilot, I believe this was my idea, but I think originally they were Jason kind of wrote like the characters talking about sort of like what happens to Shaw when he's all passed out at the beginning, and like I think they mentioned the clown punch as well.
That's a nice touch.
Yeah, and I actually asked him like maybe we should make that a scene at the beginning where he's actually passed out on the pavement and like, you know, just kind of show the audience versus tell the audience, you know, what's going on, so we kind of bring them there. But you know, that was like, you know, just minor things like that. And you know, and I also, me and Jason edited, but I kind of like brought my editing experience and just kind of, again, gave it structure and shape. And sometimes I'd add titles or to fix these scenes or to help bring clarity to like this scene to transition into that scene and whatnot. But the approach to actually making the thing was, I mean, it's kind of like, it was, again, kind of just intuition. And we actually had 3 cameras for some of these shoots. I like shooting with 3 cameras. I'm actually like Ridley Scott. I could shoot with 9 cameras. Just give me a big fucking army and some, like, you know, down any day of the week, man. I could shoot with so many cameras. But, you know, we only got, we got 3 because there was a big kind of fight scene and dialogue scene happening between, like, I think.
What did you have 2 handheld and then 1 like just on a tripod or something?
I think they were all handheld.
Okay.
Yeah. And we just kind of kept it, you know, fairly steady. I like handheld shots, but, you know, I also like keeping images kind of clear where you can see what's going on. So it's just all really just getting coverage. And we did at one point try to shoot the whole prankster segment, kind of like a documentary gone wrong, like where the camera's getting all jittery and frantic and you're just trying to follow like everybody and trying to see where to go. But I mean, really, it all comes down to... actually, I just want to like, I want to pivot for a second. So like, I had a third thing I want to mention up. I met Martin Scorsese one time.
Wow.
And I promise I'll bring it back. So I met him at the screening for an Elia Kazan film that he was screening. And I got to ask him a question afterward, but I was like so nervous to approach him because I was nerding out saying, I love your movies and you're my favorite filmmaker and I love Goodfellas and blah, blah, blah. And he was so patient with me. So I asked him, you know, when you're shooting a movie, like, how do you know where to put the camera? And he again told me, you know, it all really comes down to your first instincts. Like, you could put a camera, like, you know, straight onto an actor. You could put it in the reflection of a pool and like show a different side of them. It really depends on like where you want to put the camera to help tell the story or what you're trying to say in the scene. So with that in mind, you know, I was just trying to bring sort of what I felt was sort of that would help tell the story in the most real and in the most funny way for Shaw or for my other projects, you know, which is what I like about filmmaking. Sometimes I just love experimenting with different styles. Sometimes I shoot handheld. Sometimes I shoot on sticks. Sometimes I like shooting wide angle lenses. Sometimes I love telephoto, you know, it kind of depends. I just love trying things out.
I think it's amazing that he took time to like go over things with you like that, because
yeah,
he's a filmmaker's filmmaker. You know what I mean? So like,
oh yeah.
And his answer is so awesome. It's like, man, you're just the best. He's the best.
Yeah. And yeah. Like, it's fun because I love the collaborative process and working with Jason. It was all about, looking at all the takes from the actor, seeing which one the best one was, seeing how they fit. And the viral video that you actually see at the end of the episode was something that me, Jason, and our other roommate, Alex, he was our composer. He actually composed the viral video song that I then had to edit the clips too. So me and Jason and Alex and our other roommate, Greg, I think we were all just picking and choosing archival footage to put in the video. Where would this piece go? Which would be the funniest version of this scene in this moment? What could go where? And it was kind of a cool collaborative experience just to make that viral video, because people laugh at that shit. That viral video is just
It's the guerrilla style too. That's what makes it cool. It's captivating because it looks like you're a witness, to the action.
Yeah.
Quick, we're running out of time, but where can people find you if they want to find you online and then want to ask you to direct a music video or a web series or any other, maybe it's a movie, who knows? Tell me where people can find you online.
So my website is www.carrievishwanathan.com. My Instagram is Carrie V Productions. That's my filmmaker Instagram. If you like to see my paintings, it's Carrie V at Instagram. What else? I'm working on a documentary about artists on the spectrum. So if you're on the spectrum and you are interested in maybe being in my documentary, let's hit me up and we can have a talk and figure out where to go from there.
That's awesome. Well, I'll have to have you back on when that's finished, man.
Yeah,
you're a great filmmaker. I'm so glad you were able to be on the show. Thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood, bro.
Thanks. Dude. Happened to me. This was fun, and considering I just impulsively went on the show, 20 minutes before we actually aired, it was just this is a fun interview. I'm surprised how relaxed I am.
Well, I'm honored, and you have an open invitation to come back. We'll have to follow up when you finish your next film and have you on the show. Thanks for being a guest on behalf of Sam, myself, and Carrie Vishwanathan.
Yes,
right. Yes, I redeemed myself.
You redeemed yourself.
We'll see you guys next week. Peace and love. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Woo!
Listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.